If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it, Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome back to the Jet Press Podcast. My name is Justin Fried, and I'm joined, as always, by my man, Mike Luciano. Mike, it is Wednesday. We are about an hour away from the official start of free agency. But, of course, a lot has happened in Jets land. How are you feeling right now as of 2:47 p.m. on Wednesday, March 13th, 2024? What's up, buddy? How you doing?
I'm mostly amazed that these complex multi-year deals got worked out in, what, like 30 minutes after the legal tampering period started?
Never forget when Alex Kappa signed a minute after the legal tampering period started. That was the quickest negotiation of all time.
Yeah, I don't even think you read the contract, but I'm excited to do kind of a full free agency analysis, especially because last year everything was so dominated by Aaron Rodgers. Even like the Lazard signing, we didn't even really get a chance to dive into live on stream because it was all Rodgers talk for a month. And remember the leverage thing and who's going to send what pick? I mean, finally we're done with leverage talk and we can actually just talk some ball.
I forgot about the L word. Why would you bring that up?
Because it's remember your history. It's important. So it's important to look back on guys who just signed with the Jets, who just got traded to the Jets. We'll get into that pretty soon. And guys who have departed, maybe some expected, some not so expected. But we'll get into all that. As always, you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, wherever you get your podcasts. We're on all those platforms. YouTube and TikTok, while TikTok's still around after the ruling today, at the Jet Press for both of them. YouTube subscribes really help. Liking the stream really helps. Good reviews on all the podcast platforms. They help in terms of driving us up, helping us with the algorithm. So if that's how you want to show your support for the show, we are very grateful for that. Let's just talk some ball.
Hold on really quick. And I mentioned this to you briefly before the show. I feel like we've not become known, but we've have a running gag where it seems like every big Jets wide receiver move that happens to happen while we're on the show, while we're live. The Elijah Moore trade, Corey Davis retiring like a minute or two into the show. There's so many. Denzel Mims was traded, I believe, during the show or something like that. Along those lines, the Jets have not made a wide receiver move yet. If something happens over the next hour, we got you. All right. Well, I feel like it's inevitable at this point. Something's going to happen. Hopefully it's Mike Williams. Hopefully it's Tyler Boyd, something like that. But if the Jets sign Marquez Valdes-Scantling during the show, we will have no one to blame but ourselves. And I'll feel very sad about that.
What they did do is make some offensive line moves, getting two former Baltimore Ravens. So 40% of the offensive line from the league's best unit that helped Lamar Jackson win an MVP. They are now Jets. I think to varying degrees of approval from what I saw on Jets Twitter. They have a new left guard, John Simpson, on a 2-year, $12 million deal. And they have a new right tackle, Morgan Moses, who was acquired today for a 4th-round pick and a 6th-round pick. So the Jets are going to basically move down a couple spots in the 4th round and give up their 6th, and they get Morgan Moses from Baltimore. Having done a lot of Baltimore stuff just in my professional career, I think I have a pretty unique perspective on this and that I was surprised this is the direction Baltimore went because they have Kevin Zeitler still a free agent and Ronnie Stanley I thought was just going to get cut. I thought it was like a formality, like, oh, when they cut Ronnie Stanley, then they'll do this and this and this. But they did not. They reworked Ronnie Stanley's deal and they got rid of Morgan Moses, who's much cheaper on a 3-year, $15 million deal, but he's gone. Let's start with Moses, I think, because he's the bigger name and it happened today. Durable. He only played 14 games last year, and I believe that was the first time since like 2015 where he actually missed a game. I at the offensive line position, I mean, that is unrivaled durability. That's what you want. They did try to test out kind of a proto-replacement plan last year because near the end of the year, Daniel Falele, if you remember him, that guy from Minnesota was like 400 pounds. They kind of put him in for a couple games, see how he did. Did okay. Not great, but okay. So I don't think he's going to be their right tackle, but they definitely have an idea what he could be. They saw Morgan Moses as expendable. He's not going to be a game changer in the offensive line. I don't think he is what he was, even during his first stint with the Jets or even like the end of his Washington tenure, but he's still pretty good. He's still pretty good. I know he gave up, they said, like 5 sacks, but his pressure rate allowed is kind of above average. Pretty solid run blocker and pass protector. It's not like he's great at one and terrible at the other. You could certainly do a lot worse for a right tackle for Morgan Moses. I think this also pencils in Elijah Vera Tucker at right guard. So with that move, you pretty much now have 4/5 of your offensive line sorted out. Because Simpson, will get into him. He's the left guard. Tippmann's at center. Vera Tucker's probably going to go to right guard. Morgan Moses, your right tackle. And then left tackle is probably going to be some combination of David Bakhtiari and whoever the number 10 pick is. So very quickly, the Jets offensive line went from complete shambles to maybe they got something here.
I'm going to push some agenda on you really quick. Ready? I'm going to push some more. I'm going to put some pro Morgan Moses propaganda for you. There were three players in the NFL last season who fit, or three right tackles in the NFL last season who finished with a PFF pass block and run block grade higher than 75. Penei Sewell, Lane Johnson, and Morgan Moses. All right. There's your right tackle. There's your Morgan Moses propaganda for the day. I love this move, obviously. I think Jets Twitter and Jets fans as a whole were on the verge of melting down before this happened. I'm just so glad that the Jets did this so that we don't have to talk about anything going on with Aaron Rodgers at the moment or whatever else we're going to talk about. I don't want to hyper-analyze them signing a nose tackle. Like, I just don't. This is an amazing move by the Jets. It's the best move by far that they've made this offseason. They moved down, I think, like 15, 20 spots in the fourth round, and they gave up a compensatory sixth-round pick. It's the equivalent of basically giving up like a mid to late fifth-round pick, and they got a really good right tackle who, I know you said he might not be quite as good as he was in his Jets days. I mean, I think he's still above-average starter.
Without question.
Absolutely an above-average starter at right tackle. 33 years old, but he's shown no signs of slowing down, has shown no injury history throughout his career, as you mentioned. I believe, yeah, like you said, last year was the first time he missed a game due to anything since his rookie season in 2014. So he is a durable player, obviously has experience with this same coaching staff. He was there in 2021, his experience with the front office, well-liked dude, highly respected leader, and they got him for basically nothing, for the equivalent of a mid to late fifth round pick. On top of that, the maybe most important part to me is his cap hit next year is $5.5 million. That is nothing. Absolutely
for,
nothing.
For a right tackle in this market, Robert Hunt got $100 million. I know he's a guard, right, but he had $100 million over 5 years. Morgan Moses is $5 million for 1 year. I mean, in terms of value, Robert Hunt's a little bit better. That is, the gap is not that wide between the two.
And I really wanted Robert Hunt. Robert Hunt was my favorite free agent target for the Jets. When I saw he got $100 million, I'm like, damn, that's crazy. I'm shocked he got more than Mike Nwenu, by the way.
Funny Carolina, Robert. We ain't paying that.
I know. Nwenu got like $17 million, $18 million at right tackle. Hunt or Moses is not that much worse than Hunt and Nwenu. I'd say he's pretty close to Hunt's tier, and he plays a more important position at tackle than guard, and you have him for $5.5 million this season. That is an incredible value signing or value trade by Joe Douglas. I tweeted this out before. You know, say what you want about Joe Douglas's draft record outside of 2022. It's really bad. Say what you want about his free agent record, because that's also not very good. But the man can trade. This is an amazing move for the Jets. It honestly changes my expectations for the offensive line as a whole, because I think a lot of people, like you said, Mike, were very nervous about what was going to happen with the offensive line because they saw a lot of the top targets go. Morgan Moses was not on anybody's radar because you literally cover the Ravens as well, and you were shocked that they traded him, because this is it doesn't really make much sense from their perspective. At least it's surprising. Nobody expected Moses to become available. So shout out to the Jets. Shout out to Joe Douglas for getting this done. Of all the moves we talk about today, this is going to be by far my favorite move. Unless they go out and sign Mike Williams or something. Then we'll if it happens during the show, I reserve my right to change that opinion.
If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it. Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
It's going to be the least controversial, because Morgan Moses has been, I mean, you can't get a more dictionary definition of a rock solid tackle than Morgan Moses. John Simpson, I feel like, was the one that was a little more let's say controversial. I know me and you had kind of differing opinions on the Simpson signing, mostly because I'm really confused in the way he was discussed. Now, for those that don't know, quick backstory on Simpson. Played for 3 years with the Raiders as a John Gruden pick. Not very good. Goes to the Ravens and just revitalizes his career immediately. Only gives up one sack last year. Plays all 19 games that the Ravens had. I think, all 19 games. Get a pretty cheap deal for a starting guard, too. Like, they're paying a left guard and a right tackle $11 million combined.
Yeah.
I mean, that is not – some guys are paying one starter more than that. And the Jets now got 40% of their line sorted out for that price. Simpson was funny to me just because the way he was being described was so weird. Like, maybe there's something to say about the new, information economy where you could just talk to two different people and one person said he's a good run blocker, bad pass blocker, and then another set of data said he's a good pass blocker and a bad run blocker. I went back and looked at some of Simpson's games from Baltimore, one of his better ones being against a future Jet that we'll get into, but that's for another day. The thing that kept coming up, if it was like sum him up in one word, it would be strong. Mm-hmm. Dude is so he might be pound for pound the strongest guy on the team. I mean, he'd be a good like offensive lineman 35 years ago, if that makes any sense, because he is just big and strong and mean. Like, there were two plays that were kind of going viral on Twitter that I think kind of summed up Simpson. There was one where they were playing Seattle and Gus Edwards runs in for a touchdown. And then you hear him on Mike Dub going, I F that bitch up. After he hit a guy really hard in the gap, and that kind of speaks to what he is as a player. And there's another one where they were playing Cleveland where they were pulling him, and he just flat packs Za'Darius Smith, and it was kind of fun to watch. He actually was a pretty good road-grading run blocker. I mean, Gus Edwards got 13 touchdowns, and Lamar Jackson was running all day behind John Simpson. I mean, he broke a couple of those big runs with setting up key blocks. The one sack is a little bit of a misnomer because once you have Lamar – it kind of helps, you escape some of that. But I will say this, though, in terms of average time to pressure, this is per Next Gen Stats, how much time does it take for somebody to get by you for a pressure? Among all interior guards, or specifically left guards, I should say, John Simpson was fourth in the league. The only ones better than him were Joe Thuney, Connor McGovern of the Bills, surprise, and Landon Dickerson, who just got a bajillion dollars from the Eagles.
I love this.
So when you're in that sort of company, pretty good. Now, the thing that I thought was the weird part about signing him wasn't the value, wasn't the run blocking, it was the scheme fit, because the Jets are zone blocking Shanahan totally. That's why Lakin Thompson got signed. That's just what they do. John Simpson is very plodding. That was one of even the knocks at Clemson, was he kind of getting to the second level. It wasn't necessarily his best trait. Maybe they go more gap scheme this year. I don't know. But if any, just on a base level, Simpson is a really tough guy and a really good run blocker coming off a career year. So to get him for that sort of value after performing pretty well for the best team in the AFC for most of the year, not too bad as far as left guard signings go.
Yeah, I had mixed feelings about the John Simpson signing. And I think that my opinion has shifted a little bit now that the exact details of the contract have emerged, because at first it was reported that it was a 2-year, $18 million contract, which $9 million for John Simpson. I was like, I was not super on board with that. I want to say too, that I think part of my interpretation of John Simpson is skewed because I did cover the Las Vegas Raiders when he was drafted. So I watched John Simpson in his rookie season and I kept up with him after that while he was with the Raiders, and he was very bad. Like, I will not sugarcoat it. He was downright unplayable at times. They gave him a chance to start in his second season. He was really, really bad, and they benched him after that, and that was pretty much it. He didn't even make it through his third season before he was waived with the Raiders. Ended up signing on with the Ravens practice squad last year. Was pretty – or I think 2022, technically, like late in the year, 2022. He was on the verge of being out of the league. Like, that's – this wasn't a guy who was trending up in the right direction. He was cut in his third year in the NFL, was given a chance to be a starter, completely flopped, and then was almost out of the league. Goes into 2023 – into the summer of 2023, fighting for the left guard job in Baltimore, wins it, and honestly, plays decent, plays all right. My concerns with the move initially and still presently are, I know he was awful with the Raiders. He was really, really bad. Players can take strides, and they can absolutely make or improve, and I'm sure he did to some degree, but how much...
I will say this to interject briefly. He did put out an interview. He was interviewed where he basically talked about how he just mentally was, he just needed to get the hell out of Las Vegas, how it was a bad environment. He felt not depressed, but his confidence was beaten down. John Gruden, bad environment, shocker. Then he leaves, goes to Baltimore. John Harbaugh, better coach, better environment than John Gruden. And then look what happens to him. So maybe it was just a case that he needed to get the hell out of there. And even if he's not going to be an elite guard every year, just the base improvement he made is good enough to be a starting guard.
Yeah, and I think the mindset thing is important, because look at someone like Solomon Thomas, who unfortunately went through a lot of really difficult struggles early in his career. Immensely, he had a pair of off-field tragedies that he had to deal with, and it was rough. But now he's with the Jets, and I do imagine he will be brought back still, despite the defensive tackle signings that they've made. And he's putting together a good career for him. So shout out to Solomon Thomas for that. But yeah, I mean, back to John Simpson. My concern is still how much of the improvements that he made last season are a product of playing alongside, like you said, maybe the best offensive line in the NFL and with a super mobile quarterback in Lamar Jackson, and how much of it was his actual improvement. I don't know. And I think that's a question we're going to answer this season, hopefully. I do have, like, as far as the scheme fit, I was a little confused by that as well. But after they went out and got Moses, at this point, I'm almost thinking that they're going to just change a lot of what they do. I wouldn't be shocked if we see a lot of power run, getting these guys out in space. I want to see John Simpson pulling and just blocking a linebacker 15 yards down the field. That's what I want to see.
Well, he would end somebody's career hitting a linebacker head on like that.
That's what I want to see. And you can do that. You can lead into that power run offense because you have Breece Hall, who is really, really good. And they're probably going to sign a veteran running back who could fit that scheme too. I wouldn't be opposed to that at all, because clearly what they've been doing with the offensive line over the last couple seasons, part of it is injuries, but it's not been working. So I don't mind a scheme change. And, you know, they brought in 40% of the offensive line from the Ravens, who were maybe the best power run team in the NFL. Sure. Might as well borrow some elements from that offense, from that offensive scheme. So I mean, ultimately, I think you can survive and you're fine with John Simpson as your worst offensive lineman. If John Simpson is your fifth best offensive lineman, I'm cool with that, especially if you can only get him for $6 million. I think that's fine. The issues I had with it more were, obviously, it was the first move they made. I didn't expect them to trade for Morgan Moses, which changes the entire complexion of the offensive line. And I also thought it was $9 million, which is a big difference. It's $3 million a year, but it is a pretty sizable difference. If you're paying a guy $9 million a year, you want him to be an average starter. I'm not sold that John Simpson is an average starter, but you're not going to have five great starters in the offensive line. I think he's fine, and I think if they do end up adding some elements of that power run scheme to their offense, he could be a pretty good move.
The thing too, I've seen a lot of just negative Jets fans. I even talked about this with Justin. Like, I know Jets fans are negative, but like, I saw people freaking out over a $2 million discrepancy in Javon Kinlaw's contract. Like, people are just so hot-headed right now that like, Joe Douglas could say that he's donating his salary to Little Sisters of the Poor and then go, "Why aren't you donating to St. Jude? This is horrible. Fire him. Hire Ben Johnson," or somebody like that. Like, that's the level we're at. And I saw a lot of people kind of using the pressure rates and, you know, Morgan Moses gave up five sacks and things like that. Like, those are real things.
Who's shitting on the Moses signing?
There were some.
Other than Jets Facebook, who were like, "Oh, he's old. He's a retread." Shut the hell up, first of all. If you're saying that, you're an idiot. I haven't seen anybody saying that. I've seen 99% approval rating.
Well, I've seen it more with Simpson, but some with Moses. I point to the fact, too, that Lamar, for as great as he is, because he's so mobile and runs around a lot, holds the ball a lot. Yeah. Sometimes you may get some pressures because he doesn't throw the ball in 3 seconds. So that can kind of skew things. I feel like just looking at raw pressures giving up numbers-wise and sacks given up don't really tell the whole story sometimes. And I think if you watch a little more of the Ravens film, you could see, I don't know if they're perfect schematic fits. I certainly don't think they're going to be, you know, all pros. But, I mean, look at the guys they were playing last year, man. And what was it? Not Blake Hanson. What was it? Jake Hanson?
Jake Hanson. You don't even remember.
Xavier Newman.
Jake Hanson, Xavier Newman, Chris Glazer.
Like the fact that, look, I know that could happen again when just everybody could get hurt at the same time, but like these are baseline improvements. And the fact that Joe Douglas got a huge improvement for $5 million and a comp pick they got for losing Nathan Shepard, because that was the comp pick they traded. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a Douglas. You almost need two GMs. You need a signing GM, and then Joe Douglas is the trading GM.
Maybe Rex Hogan was the signing GM, and that's why he's gone. Maybe optimism.
Mike, maybe, let's hope. As long as whoever had a part in doing the Lazard contract or Mekhi Becton, as long as they're not at the sticks anymore, we're good.
Maybe that's GM Aaron Rodgers talking. I'm not sure. But
okay.
I just had I don't even want to put out in the universe. Oh, I don't want to say.
You can do multitasker. You can do politics and GM and quarterback and D&T trips. This dude's versatile.
I just had a really bad feeling, but maybe me saying this is going to be an anti-jinx or something like that. The Jets traded for a Ravens veteran player who, in my opinion, was their best value move of the entire offseason last year, and that Ravens player was super, super durable and never got hurt. His name was Chuck Clark. The Jets.
Why did you have to do that? Like,
maybe it's an anti-jinx, Mike. I'm jinxing the jinx.
There's no way it'll happen again.
Surely not. No, because he's a former Jet, former Raven. So it's that somehow cancels out.
Let's talk about another former Raven they added, Tyrod Taylor.
Yes.
We talked about the offensive line a lot, and that's important to get that right. The number one thing they had to do this offseason was get not Zach Wilson. He could go and play for the Cardinals or for, what is it, the UFL now. He could go do that. He could go be a grad assistant at BYU, whatever. You can't have him on the Jets next year. You need a real backup quarterback in case, God forbid, that would take me out if that happens again. If this happens again, you need somebody who can operate an offense. Like, they tried to make Zach Wilson a game manager.
Yeah.
He's not a game manager. Tyrod Taylor is a game manager, but he's a damn good one. Yep. And I'll tell you this too. Shout out to Tyrod Taylor, because there are a lot of opportunities where he could have just gone, man, I quit. And this guy's made a 12-year career for himself.
He is the definition of tub thumping by Chumba.
This is a tough dude. I mean, he has the starter run in Buffalo where he was pretty good. People forget Tyrod was pretty good.
Yeah, he made a Buffalo. He made a Pro Bowl.
He goes to Cleveland. Baker Mayfield overtakes him. Then he goes. Remember the Chargers when the doctor punctured his lung when he was the starter?
Dude,
that whole thing. I would have quit after that. He didn't. And instead, he rehabilitated his value enough with the Texans in that horrible David Culley year and the Giants for 2 years, where now the Jets pick him up at age 35. So Taylor played 2 years with the Giants, got a couple starts last year because of Daniel Jones being hurt and stupid freaking Tommy DeVito playing it. I hated Tommy DeVito at the end of it. I'm an Italian guy from Central Jersey. I couldn't deal with the whole pizza, pasta, meatballs. I was sick of it by the end of it. So Tyrod came in and played like a real quarterback. Five starts, 2-3 record, 64% completion, 5 touchdowns, 3 picks, about 1,400 yards. Clearly the best of the three quarterbacks, like by a lot of the three quarterbacks that the Giants played last year. And for all the fans, for all the skeptics who said, well, you can't sign Ryan Tannehill or Jimmy Garoppolo or fill in your backup quarterback because this offensive line stinks and they're not mobile, Tyrod's still mobile. Now, back in the day, you could make a case, maybe a top three mobile quarterback in the league in terms of just how he could use his legs. He's certainly not that anymore. But Taylor could be a really effective runner, a really effective scrambler, and he's still very accurate. He never had the greatest arm talent-wise, but accurate, doesn't turn the ball over, has operated a bunch of offenses for a bunch of years. He can pick things up quickly. This is pretty much an ideal signing. I know that Tannehill seemed like he was going to be the guy because of all the Titans connections and because Tannehill has more pedigree, but I'm finding it really hard to find fault in the Tyrod Taylor signing. Now, if he plays, that's a problem because that means something has gone terribly wrong, but just in case, the Jets finally got that whole backup quarterback thing sorted. No more Zach Wilson, actually Zach Wilson doing okay when he goes 13-24 and gets sacked 6 times. No more of that. We got an actual NFL quarterback in here.
And here's the thing that fans, I feel like a lot of fans overlook when it comes to backup quarterbacks. You're not signing Tyrod Taylor to hopefully start 17 games for you, right? Obviously, if Aaron Rodgers tears his Achilles in week one again, you're probably screwed. Even with Tyrod Taylor, you might not make the playoffs. You might squeak in. You're not winning a Super Bowl, that's for sure. So that's not the point of the signing. The point of the signing is, hey, what if Rodgers misses 3 or 4 games? Those 3 or 4 games are absolutely massive in the course of a 17-game NFL season, and you want to have a chance to win those games. Tyrod Taylor gives you a better – I believe it's Tyrod, by the way. I know everyone always says Tyrod. I'm almost positive it's Tyrod Taylor.
But Jason and Travis Kelce, apparently that's not how they say their last name. So
I think he actually pronounces
it's supposed it Tyrod. To be Kels, but they say yes, Kelce.
I think he actually pronounces it Tyrod, though, and everyone always just says Tyrod, but it's just
T. Taylor, the Jets quarterback.
I'm going to try and train that out of myself, but it's not like, yeah, Tyrod Taylor gives you a better chance to win a football game than Trevor Siemian, Tim Boyle, and Zach Wilson. It's as simple as that. The Jets tipped their hand multiple times this offseason. I mean, Joe Douglas straight up said they were going to target a veteran backup quarterback. Like, he literally said that. And Joe Douglas doesn't tip his hand with any of that stuff. So it was pretty clear that they were going to prioritize the position. Finally, for the first time in Joe Douglas's entire time at the Jets, people forget 3 years ago, and I know it's easy to forget because Mike White ended up becoming an actually capable backup quarterback, the Jets went into the 2021 season without a single quarterback on their active roster who had ever taken a snap in the NFL. That's insane. That's insane that an NFL team did that. That was Zach Wilson, Mike White, and I believe they still had James Morgan. That was their quarterback room.
Shrine Bowl star James Morgan.
Right, and I know
same White Shrine Bowl with Bryce Huff. We'll get into that later.
There you go. And I know White ended up becoming a capable player, but there was a complete unknown. He was a practice squad player at that point. I do love Brian in chat really quick, counting down the minutes until Zach Wilson is released. We're hoping he's traded. I don't know if he's going to be. I know Brian put in chat before, released in 60 minutes. Now it's 50 minutes. By the way, appreciate you guys' comments. Everybody commenting. If you comment, we'll try and get to it for sure. We got a lot of people watching right now. Always appreciate the support. But yeah, I love the move. I don't think it's possible to find fault in this. Yes, they paid a lot. I think it's $9 million. I don't know if that's going to be, I don't know if the $18 million is max or if it's actually $9 million a year. Either way, I'm very happy that the Jets finally prioritized the backup quarterback position, because if Aaron Rodgers does miss any time this season, awesome, cool, that's fine. You at least have a capable backup quarterback that you can insert into the game and have trust and have faith that he might be able to win you some games.
So we got DeSauce on YouTube. That's a nice name. Maybe it's a Sauce Burner account. I like the Morning Moses signing, but I was under the impression we were taking a right tackle at 10. Now I'm thinking wide receiver. Well, they could. I mean, the problem is it's a lot of mock drafts had them taking Taliesi Fuaga, who is strictly a right tackle. So I think maybe unless you want to convert Fuaga to left tackle, I think that makes him specifically and Latham from Alabama specifically. Right. Less likely. I think probably the plan right now, because honestly, they have four spots locked in. Tippmann, Vera Tucker, Moses, and Simpson. That's four or five. The only one that isn't is left tackle. And I know we've said, oh, don't bring in David Bakhtiari. Like, Bakhtiari is going to happen. Like, it's going to happen. The plan's probably going to be him and probably whoever you take number 10 overall. Maybe they're getting good feelings about maybe Olu Fashanu's there. Maybe if Fashanu isn't there, they can trade back to like 17 or 18. And then get like an Amarius Mims a little bit later who could play left tackle. They need to still probably consider taking an offensive lineman very high in this draft, especially because they don't have a second round pick because of Rodgers. But I also wouldn't be opposed to maybe they go get like a Tyron Smith and then offensive line's just sorted pretty much. And then you could take wide receiver because this is also a deep wide receiver class. It's a good problem to have because the two positions that are really deep this year, wide receiver, offensive tackle. Good year for the Jets to need two of those things.
Correct, yeah. My assumption is still that they end up signing Bakhtiari and then drafting a left tackle at 10. And if that's the case, I am very cool with this offensive line. I'm very, very happy with the state of the offensive line. If they draft Bakhtiari or if they sign Bakhtiari, end up getting a Fashanu at 10, that is maybe best case scenario for the offensive line. But there is a world I could see where the Jets do sign like a Tyron Smith. They have given themselves, because they went cheap with Moses and Simpson and ended up getting them on very good value deals, they have plenty of financial flexibility. I mean, the Jets could triple their cap space right now if they just restructured Mosley, JFM, and Quinnen Williams. They don't have to do anything else other than restructure those three contracts, and they triple their current cap space. That doesn't mean they have to do that, but they have the financial flexibility to do that if they want to spend top dollar on a Tyron Smith or if they want to make a big move for a wide receiver, Mike Williams. I mean, probably not going to go for Calvin Ridley, but if they wanted to, sure, do something like that. They have the financial flexibility to do that. I still think the most likely scenario is Bakhtiari and then draft the left tackle at 10. As far as Fuaga and Latham are concerned, it really just comes down to the Jets' evaluation. I mean, Amarius Mims is another guy who played primarily right tackle in college. It depends on how the Jets see them. I know Latham has spoken about maybe wanting to play left tackle as well. He's open to it. I'm sure
Left tackle pays more money. That's why he wants to.
And they get drafted higher. Like, I'm sure Fuaga would be open to it. I'm sure Mims would be open to it. It comes down to the Jets' evaluation. Or if they want to get absolutely nuts, and I said this on Twitter, and this is not probably not going to happen, but you never know. What if the Jets just sign Kevin Zeitler and they move Elijah Vera Tucker to left tackle? I don't know if they should do that. They probably shouldn't, but wouldn't it be really funny if 3/5 of the Jets offensive line was former Ravens? They would have more 2023 Ravens starters on their offensive line than 2023 Jets starters. In fact, since Tippmann didn't even start week one, they already do. They already have two former Ravens starters on their offensive line and one, I guess, 2023 week one Jets starting offensive lineman. But that's another possibility. I don't think it's likely. I think Bakhtiari and whoever, the 10th overall pick at left tackle is probably the most likely scenario.
I mean, we were doing the math before the show. I believe the Jets have, in the last calendar year, signed like 11 or 12 players that were either former Packers, Ravens, or 49ers. So they certainly have a type.
The Jets are re-signing Thomas Morstead. Let's go.
Oh, I thought this was going to be like Mike Williams or something. He can't do that.
Thomas Morstead is the most important re-signing or signing that the Jets can make today. How dare you, Mike? Don't you dare.
I just thought that was honestly just going to happen. Maybe that I have too much childlike wonder. I just assumed they were going to get Thomas Morstead back. But
no, I would have been like,
he can't do that.
I would have been freaking out if it was Mike Williams. They're signing him to a 2-year, $5 million deal. So it's different than the contract he signed last year, which the Jets were not able to re-sign Morstead until Wednesday. People were wondering what the reasoning was. It's a little quirk in his contract. I think it's called the veteran salary benefit or something like that. Basically, you sign a minimum contract, but you take lower than the minimum, or you count less than the salary cap, or less than the minimum towards the salary cap. But because of that, they couldn't re-sign until Wednesday. So they re-signed him. Not a minimum deal. That's fine. Well-deserved pay raise. Thomas Morstead, friend of the show, is back. Good for him.
Good for Thomas Morstead. Just don't freak me out like that. I thought that was like Calvin Ridley or something like that.
I'll do like we got to make a hand signal if it's like Mike Williams. I'll like.
Well, we don't, because the last time they traded Elijah Moore, you just went whoa 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 and middle right, of the show.
I'll do whoa 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 if it's like crazy. I'll just like silently pump my fist. If
that's
it's not.
Just too complicated. Let's just call it out if we see it. So let's move on to one of those former 49ers that the Jets signed. And a brief talk about an Arizona Cardinal they just signed, because they did just beef up the defensive line with Javon Kinlaw and Leki Fodu, whose real first name is George. So I don't know where Leki came from, but it's for George Leki Fodu. The former Kinlaw, the Niners really had high hopes for this guy. They traded DeForest Buckner for a first-round pick. They essentially traded DeForest Buckner for Javon Kinlaw, thinking they could reset the clock and get another DeForest Buckner. Let's say that didn't work out. He only had 5 sacks in 4 years. He didn't have a sack at all in 2021 or 2022 because of injuries. He only played like 10 games. It's kind of a Simpson thing where last year was his best year of the four, 3.5 sacks. And Robert Saleh, this is, again, him taking a shot on a guy he knew, he believed in. I'm sure they consulted Robert Saleh when asked about Javon Kinlaw. You think this guy would be good? Totally. Sure.
This was a solid signing.
I remember when I went to the Senior Bowl in 2020, there were two people who did actual press conferences before the event. It was Jalen Hurts and Javon Kinlaw. Mm. Not Herbert, not anybody yet. Jalen Hurts and Javon Kinlaw. So those are the guys that, like, they thought the world of this guy. Big, strong guy, at his best, pretty quick, too. Plays aggressive. Like, all stuff that sounds good for Robert Saleh. You just have no guarantee he's going to stay healthy. And I just don't think he's the same player he was coming out of South Carolina, because you could see the injury starting to take hold of him. He did get a little bit better in the postseason. Like, he made some plays in that Super Bowl run. Kinlaw is one of those guys. I know the money was a little more expensive than some people wanted, like $7-ish million. I don't know if it was exactly seven or a little over it, but $7 million for Javon Kinlaw, especially when you had Quentin Jefferson, who is probably a better player right now than Javon Kinlaw, for cheaper, and you probably could have brought him back and you didn't. So that's tough. It's a real gamble, but I'm not as mad as some other people were, just because for all of Robert Saleh's faults, and there are faults, plenty of them, how many defensive linemen has he correctly identified as good or taken when they were bad and developed them into being good? I mean, look at their line right now. Jermaine Johnson, the jump from year one to two. Quinnen Williams was not nowhere near this good when Adam Gase was the coach. John Franklin Myers was a Rams castoff. Now he's a core member of the Jets. even Bryce Huff, who we're going to talk about. I mean, Bryce Huff was an undrafted situational pass rusher, and he morphed into a $51 million player. Like, Saleh's scheme is good for defensive linemen. It seems like he knows what he needs to really make it work. Even Jefferson was like second on the team in sacks, and he was like a May signing that wasn't really a blip on the radar. It was just, okay, we got Quinn and Jefferson. All right. And look what happened to him. So Kinlaw's a gamble, but this is a good spot if you're Kinlaw too to try and resurrect your career, because they have a good track record with guys like him.
It's a perfect landing spot for Javon Kinlaw, and it's one that I saw coming a mile away. Like, I think a lot of others have talked about it too, but I wrote plenty of stuff about Javon Kinlaw going to the Jets because it just made too much sense. Much like I was covering the Raiders in 2020 when John Simpson was drafted, I was also covering the 49ers. So I got to see Javon Kinlaw when he was drafted. The scoop on him is that they drafted him to replace DeForest Buckner. That was their plan because Buckner was shipped to Indianapolis. They needed a new pass rushing three tech defensive tackle that would fill that void. And it was Kinlaw. Kinlaw was the guy that Robert Saleh wanted. Kinlaw was the guy that entire team wanted. Unfortunately, never really lived up to expectations. Didn't do much in his rookie season. Then he ran into injury troubles. He played a combined 10 games from 2021 to 2022. I believe it was both knee injuries. I think the first knee injury never really fully healed, and it ended up carrying over into 2022, and he got shut down again. So a lot of knee injuries there those last two seasons, but came back healthy this year, played a full 17-game season, and was all right. He was pretty decent. 3.5 sacks, like 30 pressures, 31 pressures. Fine player. And I was very happy when they made the signing. I was like, you know what? This makes sense. Probably a replacement for Quentin Jefferson. My thinking at the time, which is now changed because we've seen the contract, and I'm not going to come out here and just lose my mind because they overpaid for Javon Kinlaw. At least I think they overpaid for him, especially because now they made the move for Morgan Moses, so I'm less mad. But I do think that, or my thinking at the time was that, okay, Quentin Jefferson had 6 sacks last season. Maybe his market's a little bit higher than we expected. Maybe the Jets are going to try and go cheap, and it makes sense for Kinlaw to reunite with Saleh. Saleh was a big fan of Kinlaw when they were in San Francisco. He fits the exact type of athletic pass rushing three tech that they want. It makes sense. It made sense to me. And then it was revealed that he had a $7.25 million contract, $6.9 million in guarantees. I believe that's the 24th highest cap hit amongst all defensive tackles in football this season. That's a lot.
He's starting in base defense with four downs, four linemen.
He is starting the way that Quentin Jefferson started. He's not a starter. He's going to play under 50% of snaps, just like Quentin Jefferson played under 50% of snaps. That's your starting defensive tackle next to Quentin Williams. I like Kinlaw, and I understand that. I understand that Robert Saleh has a really good track record with developing defensive linemen and maximizing them. But I think because of that, because of everything you said about, hey, look at what he got from Quentin Jefferson. Look at what he got from Solomon Thomas. They made all these small investments, and it turned out to be really good moves. I think because of all of that, you didn't need to pay $7 million for Javon Kinlaw, because you could have brought back Quentin Jefferson. I would be, and look, I'll admit if I'm wrong, I will be stunned if Quentin Jefferson signs a contract that is larger than Javon Kinlaw's. Maybe I'm wrong. I would be stunned if that happens. And like you said, and I agree with this, Quentin Jefferson is currently a better player than Javon Kinlaw, and he does not have an injury history to speak of, at least not nearly as extensive an injury history as Javon Kinlaw. Kinlaw had, I believe, one more pressure than Jefferson last season, and he played 30% more pass rush snaps than Quentin Jefferson. On top of that, Quentin Jefferson basically had double the sacks as well. Quentin Jefferson's a better player. He's better than Javon Kinlaw. I don't dislike the signing per se. I just think that they essentially paid more to downgrade, and I don't think that necessarily is a good move. I'm not going to lose my mind over it, especially because of the Morgan Moses move, but I'm not a fan at the price that they got him.
I think he'll be like, Jefferson was not a good run defender at all last year.
Kinlaw's a really bad run defender.
I think the thing though is the idea of what Kinlaw could be as a run defender is pretty okay, because at South Carolina he was.
Sure.
And honestly, early on, before like he just started getting banged up all the time, like you could see where he was an okay run defender. So I get this is probably, I know Saleh, this is another Saleh, like, look, I can fix him. I can fix him guy. But you know what? He's right, because he did fix guys. Not that Jermaine Johnson was broken, but he was an older pass rusher with a below average pressure rate. They picked him in the first round. Look what happened to Jermaine Johnson. He fixed John Franklin Myers.
Yep.
He beefed up, right? Like, he kind of fixed Quentin Jefferson, because Quentin Jefferson's going to get a much bigger deal than he got last offseason. Like, I'm willing to take this chance. because he's proved me wrong before. He's done it before. I know that Jefferson's better now, and it's basically a one-year prove-it deal, so why would you sign an inferior player on a one-year deal? But I feel like this is kind of like a one-year deal, and then if you're really good, we'll kick you another year deal after that. I feel like Kinlaw has a lot of fans in that building. The scheme is similar. You don't need to relearn the entire scheme. So if there's anywhere he's going to succeed, it's here. This is the last stop on the block for Javon Kinlaw. If he doesn't work here, I feel like it'll be tough for him to get like kind of a longer contract in the league. Lecky Fodu,
I want to respond to what you said. Hold on, before we get to
absolutely Lecky. Not. This is a dictatorship. You're just an outside observer. I get to say everything.
I'm gonna combat that because what are we gonna say about Lecky Fodu? Cool, he's an Al Woods replacement. Awesome. I think it's not that I don't have faith that Javon Kinlaw will be good under Robert Saleh and that he'll be more productive, because I do think he will. I think being in this scheme and being next to guys like Quinnen Williams and John Franklin Myers and Jermaine Johnson, unfortunately not Bryce Huff, but being in this scheme, I think he will be better and I think he will be more productive if he stays healthy. That part is that the if he stays healthy is a big reason why I think the $7 million is too much. And again, like you said, if he can do this and if he can grab a guy like John Franklin Myers off waivers and he can develop an undrafted free agent like Bryce Huff and middling, you know, very, I would say, low tier free agent signings like Solomon Thomas and Quentin Jefferson. And if he can get really good production out of all those guys, why are you paying $7 million for Javon Kinlaw? That just does not make sense to me.
Potential
on a 1 year deal. As Gregory asked in chat, is the money guaranteed? $6.9 million of it is guaranteed. So, yeah, pretty much it's a fully guaranteed deal, essentially, which it just does not make sense to me. I get why they did it, and I know Saleh is a huge fan of Kinlaw, and Saleh, this is a Saleh move. Like, Saleh is the one who pushed for this. But if
that's
you
why Solomon Thomas was here for 2 years.
Unless, look, I'll admit I'm wrong. If Javon Kinlaw comes out and has 10 sacks this season, I'll be like, all right, cool, fine. I was wrong. But realistically, what's he going to do? He's probably going to have similar production to what Quentin Jefferson did last season, and you're going to get it at twice the price that you paid for Quentin Jefferson. It just doesn't make sense. And that's if he stays healthy. It just doesn't make sense.
I will say, too, like I don't have a ton to say on Fodu because he's just probably going to be an Al Woods replacement, but I will say this. Fodu was my final, the dam broke, and I'm like, okay, PFF actually needs to do something about their defensive line grades. Because remember how you'd look at the PFF grades for every week, and even though he's not a particularly good player, but Solomon Thomas would always get like a 30.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, like he's not a 30. Like something's up with it, because Lecky Fodu for the Arizona Cardinals over the last 4 years, fourth round pick, he was picked to be a big run stuffer. He's a big guy. He's like 6'4", 335 pounds. Like that's what he did, was stuff the run adequately. Like he had an okay run stuff rate. And yet PFF was getting him 30s and stuff like that. So when I see that, I'm like, man, what are the Jets seeing him? Then I go and look at that. I actually watched a couple games of Fodu's last year because, you know, I don't have anything better to do with my time late at night. So I watched Lecky Fodu film. And you saw what the Jets wanted Al Woods to do. Big space eater, stuffs the run. I don't mind it at all. I don't know why PFF hates this guy. Plus, as a guy who loves Sione Puha, if you're a Polynesian defensive lineman who went to either BYU or Utah, I feel like, or Oregon, I feel like there's a lot of good run stuff and defensive tackles that come out of that sort of those programs.
Yeah.
Fodu's another one from Utah. Maybe this is our next Sione Puha. Who knows?
All those West Coast schools, Washington, Oregon, USC, UCLA, like any of those.
Especially the Utah ones, though, too. Those are the two. Sure. Those are the epicenters.
I really quick, just to interrupt, this is not breaking news. Nothing has happened, so don't worry. I got an email from Team Kennedy. This is sent to my official work email. This was not my personal email. This was sent to my work email.
How did they even find that?
And it's about Robert F. Kennedy announcing his vice presidential running mate. And I was sent this email. I don't know what that means.
But that's weird. How they get it? Seriously.
It's weird that they sought out somebody who covers the Jets to send this email to. And it's not about like who it is. It's like, hey, this is when it's going to happen. Tune in.
Or they could be milking a story.
Or
they want more attention on their campaign.
Or they're milking the story. And if that's the case, I just help them out. So you're welcome.
So there you go. That's the other thing. Or they realize that they're not going to win the election. So they just want their name to be in the public consciousness. And they're doing it through sports writers.
If anyone's curious, it's happening March 16th. And I could sign up to attend. I don't think I'll be doing that, but
I will not be doing that either.
fans. Just throwing that out there.
I can't think of a worse way to spend an afternoon than listening to that.
I didn't have Robert F. Kennedy's team emailing me saying, hey, cover this announcement of his vice president because you're a Jets guy. If he wins,
he might get Secret Service protection, which means it'll be really tough to sack him.
You said that in the chat yesterday, and I thought that was very funny. that is 4D chess on the part of the Jets. Anyway, yeah, that's wild that I got that email. Anyway,
you can give Vera Tucker like a gun. That'll be really hard to get by him.
Dude, that would actually – they have Secret Service on the field. That'd be really funny. Sure. That's the thing. We don't really got to talk about that. But like Ifotu, yeah, he's an Al Woods replacement. Cool. I agree with you with the PFF grades. Because the immediate thing that I did, you know, because I had heard of the name Leckie Fotu, but I didn't watch him in Arizona. Like, I don't watch a ton of Arizona Cardinals nose tackle tape. Sorry. But I remembered him coming out of Utah, and I was like, I think he was like a big one tech run stuffer nose tackle type. Like, that was what I remember. That was basically all I remembered about him. Then I went to PFF, and I'm like, what does PFF think? And they hated him. And I'm like, interesting. Especially, they hate his run defense, but they think he's one of the worst run defenders in the league. And I'm like, that seems unlikely to me. And I agree. And I took it with a grain of salt because especially PFF hated Quentin Jefferson last year. They hated Solomon Thomas last year.
They hated Quentin Williams until they literally got yelled at.
Well, no, he's
by like, Jets fans and then improved like, his grades significantly.
Yeah. Quentin was still like the top, I think their third best interior defensive lineman. They hate him. I think that
did he get like a 60 something and they changed it to like an 80? I'm like, that's a big correction for getting yelled at.
I think it was a 69, then he moved it to like an 80 for one game. But that was
the Dolphins game where he had the Tyree stiff arm. I think that was that one.
Yeah, it was. But yeah, I wouldn't take those PFF grades too seriously. And I also know that Arizona's run defense was just bad in general. So it probably wasn't helpful playing alongside guys who just were not good run defenders as well.
That's exactly it.
Yeah, putting him next to Quentin Williams should be a lot better. He's now Woods' replacement for cheap. I think they got him for $2.5 million. I have no other analysis other than he'll play 25% of snaps. He'll probably just play run downs, I guess, obvious running situations. And that's about it. Cool. Good for them.
I will say practice between him and John Simpson will be very fun.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Those are just two like extremely strong. It's like, what do they call that thing? The Arnold Classic.
Yeah,
Bodybuilders lift like 900-pound weights.
Yes.
Like the guy, the mountain from the Game of Thrones wins every year. That's what practice will be like. We're gonna discuss some departures. I know that Jordan Whitehead just recently signed a 2-year deal with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers to go back to where he was before the Jets. Expected move. Seems like a scheme where he really fits in well. He gets a good safety next to an Antoine Winfield Jr. Kind of an expected move. I know he had the picks last year, but three of them were in one quarter against Josh Allen. And outside of that, very inconsistent. And maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. Maybe you'd let us know in chat. I don't feel like a lot of Jets fans are too sad to see him go. Bryce Huff people are sad to see go.
Yeah.
Leaves with the Eagles. 3 years, $51 million. So $17 million a year for a guy who's never played 50% of snaps you could like Bryce Huff as much as you want. That is a big risk for a guy who has been a limited player for 4 years, and now you're paying him high-end money, not like elite money, but that's a lot of money for a guy that you're going to expect to go from limited to starting role. I find it weird he went to Philly too, because it's a very similar situation to the Jets in that they have star defensive tackle, established veteran edge rushers, Josh Sweat, Hassan Reddick. I know they're both in the trade market right now, but I don't think they get both of them traded. And then another first-round pick in Nolan Smith. So it's a crowded room. I know that they're changing the scheme because Vic Fangio came in. I think Huff's an okay Fangio fit. I would have liked him maybe a little wider as opposed to like hand-in-the-dirt stuff, but I think he'll be good with the Eagles. I'm fine with the Jets letting him leave at that price, because $17 million is quite expensive. You also have probably six players on the roster right now who need long-term extensions, including all four members of that big draft class, plus Rodgers. We don't know how long he's going to play. He's probably going to – well, he will demand a lot of money this year, and then who knows how long this partnership goes to. You got to keep money saved aside for if Rodgers wants to keep coming back. The issue with Joe Douglas is – it's poor asset management, not in the whole Will McDonald thing. Because again, I like Will McDonald as a prospect. We've seen Jermaine Johnson take a year or two leap. I think McDonald's going to do that too. I actually liked kind of what I saw from him in limited time this year. I'm just upset that they didn't trade him before last year, because then you would have got a head start on McDonald. You would have gotten a pick back for him. And then he leaves and you're like, okay, well, if he breaks out, at least we got a pick for him. The fact that you didn't get anything for him and you let him walk in free agency, that's the problem. I get letting him leave at that price, because that is a huge commitment. And like, look at all these positions the Jets want to add. They want multiple offensive linemen. They want probably multiple wide receivers. They still have to pay their incoming draft class. They got extensions for all this stuff. Like, they needed to diversify where they were adding guys. They needed to pick from a couple different areas. Bryce Huff would have limited that in an area where they're strong. So I get letting him go for that price, but if this happened a year ago, even though the Jets would have lost out on Huff's production, at least they get something back for him. Now you just look stupid because you let a homegrown guy leave.
They sure do look stupid, don't they? They look really, really dumb. We argued about this yesterday in we were messaging each other. I think the Jets messed up this entire situation. I don't fully understand their thinking with anything here. Bottom line, first and foremost, you pay your best players. You pay, especially pay your best players when they play a premium position, and it's a player that you developed from an undrafted free agent. He's a homegrown talent, and he plays arguably the second most position in the entire sport. Third at worst, I would say. Pass rusher is a premium position. Bryce Huff is one of the best pass rushers in the NFL. Full stop. I don't want to hear any debates about that because I won't listen to them. Bryce Huff is one of the best pass rushers in the NFL. He has the highest pressure rate amongst all players over the last 2 years. The only player with a higher pressure rate this season was Micah Parsons. Bryce Huff was given a much larger role this season. As the year went on, he took on a three-down role. His efficiency did not decrease. That should put a bed to any talks about him being a situational pass rusher who can only play on passing downs, because that's not true, because he was playing three downs a lot of the season, at least from the midway point on, and his efficiency did not decrease. Again, the only player with a higher pressure rate was Micah Parsons. Sure, is some of that inflated by the Jet scheme? Yeah, I would say so. Is some of it inflated by playing next to Quinnen Williams? Yeah, probably. Do I think that Bryce Huff is going to go to the Eagles and have 16 sacks next year? Yeah, it's totally possible. I 100% think that that's a possibility. $17 million is honestly reasonable for him. I thought he was going to get closer to 20. I think that the Jets completely messed this up. I think that you absolutely needed to re-sign Bryce Huff. Not that I expected it. We go back to April, and we were talking about the Will McDonald pick, and they didn't. And as soon as they drafted Will McDonald, it was very clear to me at the time, and I think to others, that they weren't going to re-sign Bryce Huff. Will McDonald was Bryce Huff's replacement. The Jets never expected Bryce Huff to be as good as he is now. They consistently undervalued him. This past August, they were playing him in the fourth quarter of preseason games. That's how they valued him. They didn't see him as anything more than a situational pass rusher, despite the fact that he's proven that he is more than that. The Jets never valued him. But even still, right? That's my take on it. But even if your argument is, oh, he is a situational player, they didn't need to pay $17 million for him, they should prioritize other positions, even though you could just restructure two contracts right now and very easily afford Bryce Huff's contract. It's not that they couldn't afford him. They didn't want him. But even still, if you agree with the Jets that you should not re-sign Bryce Huff, they still fucked up. They still messed the entire situation up, because the Jets have been receiving trade calls on Bryce Huff for 12-plus months. They declined all of those trade offers, every single one. We don't know what the exact specifics were. They declined every one of them. They let him walk in free agency for absolutely nothing. You want to talk about comp picks? First of all, Joe Douglas isn't even guaranteed to use that comp pick. He might not be here next year. So whatever asset management there is there, he might not even get to use that asset. And it's also not a guarantee that the Jets get a comp pick. If the Jets go out and sign Mike Williams in free agency, they're not getting that comp pick. If you want the Jets to adequately address the needs that they have in free agency right now, they sign Tyron Smith, they're not getting that comp pick. That's going to cancel that out. You're letting Bryce Huff walk for absolutely nothing. You're letting a young player who is, mind you, a year older than Will McDonald. They're almost the same age. He is a proven one of the best pass rushers in the NFL, a top four player on the roster, and who plays a premium position. You let him walk for nothing when you had every opportunity to not only extend him for cheaper, you had an opportunity to extend him this offseason, and you had an opportunity to trade him for assets, and you didn't do any of those things. You let him walk for free. That is a mess up. They
really top four. I'm thinking back on it.
Top five. I would say top five player in the team.
Garrett Quinn, and no, we're Garrett Quinn and Sauce, Brees. Yep.
Right. I mean, obviously, Rodgers, yeah. We have no idea. Rodgers, question mark. Rodgers, question mark. Bryce Huff, five. He's the best pass rusher on the team. I know Jermaine Johnson made the Pro Bowl last year. I love Jermaine Johnson. Bryce Huff is better than Jermaine Johnson right now. Maybe that won't be the case in the future. I don't know. But right now, Bryce Huff is better than Jermaine Johnson. And it goes back again to that draft pick. I know you say that the Will McDonald pick, you like Will McDonald. I do too. That pick was a mistake. I reserve the right to change my opinion. If Will McDonald becomes Lawrence Taylor, awesome. Cool. That was a great pick.
Well, the plan is he's Bryce Huff, but also cheaper.
Sure. You're trying to replace a top five player on the roster, and you're just assuming that's going to happen. That's a mistake, because what the Jets
happened with other guy, happened with Jermaine Johnson, happened with a lot of the other linemen.
Here's the thing. You want to talk about asset management. If the Jets, and this goes back to the way they handled, the Jets handled the entire wide receiver position last offseason. The Jets didn't have a single first round grade on a wide receiver in last year's draft class. That's insane.
It was a weak class, to be fair.
Jordan Addison, Zay Flowers, and Jackson Smith and Jigba were all very good as rookies. I'm not going to fault them for Puka Nacua. Nobody had a first-round grade on Puka Nacua. But all three of those guys were consensus first-round picks. All three of them could have been drafted by the Jets, and they weren't. Because the Jets—
To be fair, the only one I had a first-round grade on was Smith and Jigba.
Well, clearly you were wrong, too.
The only ones I remember being a lock were, and then maybe Addison. But again, there were size concerns, too, with both of them.
Flowers, I'll give you, was seen as more of a late first round guy.
Yeah, Flowers was the risk.
But all three of them were all taken in the first round. They're all drafted in the first round, and they were all pretty consensus first round picks. You want to talk about a guy who also was not a consensus first round pick? Will McDonald. Will McDonald and Zay Flowers have pretty similar draft pedigrees, right? And so what if the Jets just took a wide receiver then, and then they just kept Bryce Huff? You want to talk about bad asset management? That's it, because you already have a star player at a premium position that you can now extend. You reward the player that you didn't even draft. You signed as an undrafted free agent and developed, who plays a premium position and is only 25 freaking years old. And you now have a young wide receiver on a rookie contract. That is bad asset management. Because now you're just hoping. And I feel really bad for Will McDonald, because he doesn't deserve the pressure that's going to be put on him this year. If Will McDonald isn't a really good edge rusher, he's going to get shit on. And he shouldn't, because that's unfair expectations. You should not expect – I know the Jets drafted him 15th overall. It is unreasonable to expect even a 15th overall pick to become a top five player on your team. Most of the time, that will not happen. So I would say that the percentage of outcomes where Will McDonald becomes Bryce Huff, 5 to 10%, it's possible. It's certainly possible. I think he has the talent, and I trust Robert Saleh's developmental skills. But I wouldn't call it likely. And again, just really, really, really bad asset management all around, financially and position value. They messed this up.
I mean, if Huff can go from undrafted, because the first 2 years he wasn't doing like much. If he can basically go from an undrafted situational guy to a $50 million rusher in 2 years, why can't Will McDonald be a 10 sack guy next year?
He can, but
same defense.
Are you willing to like bank on that? Do you really think, like, are you positive that's going to happen? Because if you're not positive,
I'm reasonably confident that Will McDonald will be good enough where, even if he's not as good as Bryce Huff, where he's still an impactful player who you won't notice. Bryce Huff isn't there anymore because McDonald will be making plays.
But why couldn't you have just drafted a wide receiver or drafted another position of need?
I mean, you could have drafted a wide receiver. You could have done that too. Like, again, that the problem was done. I'm with you in that the problem was they screwed it up a year ago.
Okay.
I don't necessarily have an issue with letting him walk for this. Because one thing I actually do hate this. It actually drives me crazy. Oh, you know, salary cap is fake. Salary no. cap's totally yeah. That's no. why the Chargers just cut Mike Williams, because the salary cap is fake, and they totally wanted to do that. Like, eventually, you gotta pay the piper. Like, eventually, restructuring, kicking the can down the line, it'll come back together. Well, it's an all-in year. I get that, but look at all the Jets. Theoretically, if they extend all the guys we think they're going to extend, like they could. Why couldn't they be the Saints? And every year you're $60 million over the cap and you got to cut everybody loose. I'm not saying Bryce Huff alone is going to have that happen, but you do have to at least at some point say, you know what, like I respect Douglas in sometimes in that he at least says, look, this is our limit on a price. We're not going to go above it. Because, I mean, it's helped him get deals, number one. And is there really any, outside of Lazard, like how many contracts on the Jets right now are like complete anchors that are totally weighing him down?
Well, right outside now, they just cut Lakin Tomlinson.
They cut Lakin Tomlinson.
I mean, there's a lot of bad contracts that they've had that they've gotten rid of and they're still paying for. Lakin Tomlinson counts $10 million against the cap this year. He's not even on the fucking roster. CJ Uzomah counts $5 million against the cap, because not only did they sign him, but they restructured him. That's
I think that's the point too. Is that then you want to add Huff into that too?
And Carl Lawson is also counting like $6 million against the cap this year because they restructured him.
Lawson's like the one defensive lineman that didn't. And again, that's not even his fault really.
I don't blame them for Carl Lawson not working out. I thought that was a great signing at the time, and I think he would have been productive if he had stayed healthy. That's not the problem here. I think it's again. It's just.
I will say this too about your pressure rate. I did bring this up too. Bryce Huff is second in pressure rate. Third is Andrew Van Ginkel. I'm going to pay Andrew Van Ginkel $51 million.
Van Ginkel was a monster. Like, he was genuinely really good last year. He had fewer pass rush snaps, I believe, than Bryce Huff because he was also playing in coverage. Like, he's a linebacker. He's an outside linebacker. He was dropping into coverage a lot in that defense. And also, he has 1 year of doing that. Bryce Huff's done it 2 years. I know the sacks didn't come until this year. Bryce Huff was one of the best pass rushers in the NFL in 2022 and 2023. If he just did it 1 year, I would have a very different opinion on this, but he did it 2 years in a row. That's a proven commodity to me at that point. Yeah. I just think it's really bad asset management all around. Like, when it comes to what they didn't draft, I hear you when you say the mistake was made a year ago. And I agree. I think that the biggest mistake was made a year ago. I don't think the biggest mistake was letting him walk right now. I think it was a series of mistakes leading up to the mistake that they made right now, because they still could have paid him. They absolutely could have. But in theory, the better moves would have been not drafting Will McDonald. And if you're going to let him walk, trade Bryce Huff at some point and get something for him, because you're not guaranteed to get a fourth round comp pick for him. And if that's your best case scenario, if the best thing you get for Bryce Huff is a super late fourth round pick, you're telling me they weren't offered anything better than that. I don't believe that. I don't believe that the Jets weren't offered at least even a regular fourth round pick. That's automatically better than a comp pick, like a late.
They got that for Jacob Martin, who they turned into the help with the Moses trade. So.
Right. I mean, that was a pick swap, but still, those are the biggest mistakes that they made. But even still, even if they're making all of those mistakes, they still could have righted their wrongs to some degree and just extended Bryce Huff. Because I understand, you know, like, the cap is real. I'm not an idiot. There's so many teams that are getting destroyed right now this offseason because the cap is real. Look at the Chargers just let go of Mike Williams.
The Bills had to cut 10 guys because of the cap. Right.
The Ravens are not re-signing anybody because their cap, like, they're in a tricky cap situation. The cap is real. The Jets are not in that position yet. They are a very financially flexible team. They have a lot of financial flexibility. And like you mentioned, they are in an all-in year. Joe Douglas is not going to be here in 2025 unless the Jets win now. And I think letting a top five player on your roster walk for free and just hoping that a young player who was fine in his rookie season, but has shown me nothing that makes me think, oh, he's definitely going to be a 15 sack guy. Expecting that guy to fill the shoes and fill the production of a top five player in your roster in an all-in year, I just think that's a mistake. I think it's absolutely a mistake.
I just can't in the back of my mind get out. Like, this feels like when you ever see a guy in the NBA who's like a key bench player and then he gets signed to be a starter somewhere else and then he has to eventually like go back to his old, like, remember when Harrison Barnes went to the Mavericks?
Sure.
And you're like, oh man, like this need. I can't get out of the back of my mind that Bryce Huff is as good in his role for just his role as any player on the Jets was last year. And then now Philly signs him because Philly's defense was not good last year. They signed him thinking he's going to be kind of a needle mover. And I just don't know if he's going to be. I mean, no one's going to say he's bad. I think he'll probably get 10 sacks again, even with the enhanced playing time. But, and again, he isn't like, I remember the narrative was always he can't defend the run. Like, he's okay at it. He's certainly never going to be like, you know, an elite run stuffing defensive end. And, you know, but that's not his game. I get that. But, like, you talk about McDonald getting pressure. I mean, Bryce Huff in Philly is going to be asked to, because especially when they get rid of probably Sweat and, I don't think they get rid of Hassan Reddick. I think he's too good. But, like, he's going to have a target on his back, man. I don't know. And those Philly fans, they don't tolerate slow starts. So
they're not going to have to worry about that. Look, you want to bring up examples. You want to talk about Harrison Barnes. Let's talk about examples. Remember when the Broncos had, you know, were like, oh, you know, we have Bradley Chubb. We drafted DeMarcus Walker. We don't need to. We can just let Shaq Barrett go. He's a part-time player. Don't worry. He's a situational pass rusher. Goes to Tampa, has 19 and a half sacks his first season. Different situation, but Matt Judon was a very good player with the Ravens, a starter, three-down player.
Judon was a Pro Bowler, though.
He was a Pro. Was he a Pro Bowler with the Ravens? Did he make a Pro Bowl?
I believe he was. Yes.
I don't think he. I don't know if he had. I don't think he had double-digit sacks in a season.
Willing to bet on it? Let's see.
I'm not. Okay,
he never Judon did. Wow, he made two Pro Bowls with the Ravens.
He never had double-digit sacks in a season with the Ravens. Goes to the Patriots, 12.5 sacks, 15.5 sacks in his first two seasons. They thought he was replaceable. He wasn't. Another example, a guy we just talked about. Again, different position. The Niners, the San Francisco 49ers, had one of the best defensive tackles in football in DeForest Buckner. They were against the cap, and they're like, you know what? We're going to trade him, and we're going to draft a guy that we think can replace him, and we think that can replicate his production. They drafted Javon Kinlaw. Javon Kinlaw didn't even, like, didn't, they declined his fifth-year option. He had 3.5 sacks in four seasons with the 49ers. It is not a guarantee that whoever you draft, in fact, a lot of times it does not work out, that whoever you draft is going to be able to replicate the production of one of your best players. This would be a different conversation if Bryce Huff was a safety or an off-ball linebacker or a running back, right? This is a pass rusher, a premier pass rusher. Like, I can't excuse it. And I'm not saying there's no scenario where this is the right move for the Jets. I just think the outcomes, the of all the outcomes, right, and you want to use a Marvel reference, of all the timelines where this works out, there are many more timelines where it does not work out than it does work out. And that is why I think it's a mistake.
Well, I guess they're really banking on – well, again, if you're Saleh, well, I can turn undrafted Bryce Huff into 10-sack, $50 million a year guy. Why can't I do it again? Because you can't. Yeah, that's what they're saying. That's what he's saying. So,
and I get that line of thought. I just disagree with it. Like, I don't think that's the right line of thought at all.
All right, let's go and do some looking into the future and at least talk about some free agents who are still left on the board that the Jets can target. I feel like the obvious one it left is Mike Williams, and I'm going to at least steal that right now because Mike Williams just being released from the Chargers, yep. Big wide receiver, still fast. I know he's been banged up, but you could. I honestly would say probably in the last couple of years he's been better than Keenan Allen, even though Allen gets the targets. I think Williams is a more complete wide receiver. I think Allen's
not last year. Technically not last year. He wasn't better than Keenan Allen last year.
Well, the last two healthy years. I feel like Allen's slowed up a little bit with age. He was never like insanely fast to begin with. He was kind of getting a little Jarvis Landry'd, where he just kind of gets force fed a lot of short receptions. Williams, I think, might be the more explosive player. I don't know if the Jets will get him. They're going to get somebody. There's a Marquise Browns out there. There's Tyler Boyd's out there. Like, they're going to add somebody. The question that I have is just what skill are they going to look for from these wide receivers? Are they going to get a speed guy and then have two speed guys and no real, like, X receiver for Rodgers jump balls? Are they going to trust Lazard again? Are they going to get another one? And then you have two big, giant 6'4 receivers and a little tiny Garrett Wilson? That's the problem I have is I don't really see – because Lazard was so bad, and again, Lazard I think will be better next year because you have to be better. But you cannot like him a lot. He was a lot better in Green Bay than that. Yes. And I think just by virtue of having Rodgers back, he'll be better. Because I just don't know what the role for Lazard is right now. I don't know if they're going to target a Lazard stand-in or a Lazard replacement. I don't know if they're going to get somebody who's more complimentary. Because of that, I really don't know if they're going to be in on guys like Williams or if they're going to go maybe bargain bin shopping for a Hunter Renfrow or a Tyler Boyd or somebody like that.
I would much prefer Tyler Boyd to Hunter Renfrow. I think there are two.
Oh, I would too, but they both are options.
I think there are two outcomes here where I'm okay with what the Jets do this offseason in free agency, addressing their two biggest needs. Either the Jets go out and they spend big on a wide receiver too, and they're not going to get Calvin Ridley. It was already just reported that Ridley, he's down to two teams. It's the Jaguars and the Patriots, and I imagine that'll probably be done soon after four. So if you're watching this on delay, some of what we're talking about is probably already outdated, but we're going to run until four probably doing this at least. So we might find out where Calvin Ridley goes very soon, but it's not going to be the Jets. The Jets are not going to Calvin Ridley. I don't think they're going to spend big on someone like Marquise Brown. It's really going to depend what Mike Williams' market is. Mike Williams is my favorite target right now. I think he's an outstanding player. I know people will point to the injury history. Yes, he's had nagging back injuries throughout his career. I know he's coming off the torn ACL, but he also played in 15 or more games every year from 2018 to 2021, and then he played 13 games in 2022. It's not as bad as people make it seem. It's not a David Bakhtiari situation. I know he's constantly banged up, but he plays through those injuries a lot. Obviously, can't play through a torn ACL. And I also understand he's, 30 years old? I get that. I'm not naive to the risk associated with Mike Williams, but I still think given the current market of wide receivers, given the Jets' current situation in their wide receiver room, and given the expectations for the 2024 season, that's a move you make. That's a swing you take. Bars. But
can you say bars for yourself? Nah.
I don't know. I just thought it. You know what's even wider?
Off of one line.
Ugh. You know what's even worse? I desperately want the Jets to sign Mike Williams so that I can tweet out Mike Will made it and in parentheses to
fly. No, you don't. Now I don't. Don't sign him, Jets. Don't encourage this.
What's the matter with you these last couple minutes? I thought of that and I was like, oh, that's so terrible. I gotta tweet that if that happens.
No, you don't. Sometimes you gotta log off.
Look, even if I don't tweet that, I do really want Mike Williams on the Jets. I think that'd be a great move. If not, the other outcome that I'm okay with as I try and regain my composure, is if they were to just like, I want a wide receiver two on the Jets. Mike Williams is a wide receiver two. Calvin Ridley's a wide receiver two. Marquise Brown's a wide receiver two. The other outcome that I'm okay with is if they say, all right, let's pour our money into left tackle instead. Let's sign Tyron Smith. Let's get a really good left tackle. And then boom, we can address wide receiver a little bit after, or we can pour our money elsewhere. Maybe you draft the guy. And then at wide receiver, you kind of have Garrett Wilson and then a few wide receiver threes. I'm okay with that. Like I would love a wide receiver two on the Jets, but as much as I don't know what to expect from Aaron Rodgers in 2024, and as much as my expectations are low because it's been 3 years since we've seen him play at a high level. He's coming off torn Achilles. He's 40 years old. I don't know what to expect. I still think he's good enough probably to elevate your wide receiver room. And I don't think it's necessary to have a wide receiver two if that money is being if your resources are being poured into other positions, if you're spending that money on offensive line or other positions of need, I'm okay with it. So if they were to go out and they sign a Tyler Boyd and, you know, sign Odell, like I'm just throwing that out there because it seems like they're probably going to do like go after Odell again. That's cool. Like you could have a few wide receiver threes because Lazard's a wide receiver three, Boyd's a wide receiver three, Beckham's a wide receiver three. If you do that, that's fine with me.
I love this being the offseason of like, we need to get the distractions out of the building. Aaron Rodgers might be running for vice president and Odell Beckham's dating Kim Kardashian. Yeah, that'll be a quiet locker room.
Is he really? I didn't even know that. That's
crazy. Oh, yeah, he is.
How did I miss that? That's crazy.
They were together at an Oscars party.
Good for them.
Everything I've learned about that has been against my own will, but it's
same. This is the first I've learned about. Good for them. Happy for the happy couple. But yeah, those are the two outcomes that I'm okay with. Mike Williams is still probably my preference. Behind that's Tyler Boyd. I wouldn't rule out someone like Curtis Samuel. He makes sense.
I love Curtis Samuel. New York guy too. He's from New York.
He is. He's from Brooklyn, I think. I think he's from the city. I would love Curtis Samuel. Absolutely. I think to me, I prefer a Mike Williams type, like an X or a Z, because I kind of want to move Garrett Wilson around, and I would love to have him in the slot. And if you get a Curtis Samuel or even a Tyler Boyd, who I love Tyler Boyd, I just think it's harder to do that because they're really confined to the slot. My thing with Tyler Boyd, and the reason I love Tyler Boyd, and I think if they don't bring in Mike Williams, Boyd is probably my favorite option. I just think he raises the floor of that wide receiver's room so much. And the Jets need that. Like, they don't need Mike Williams. I would love Mike Williams. That raises the ceiling significantly. But I don't even think Mike Williams raises the floor as much as Tyler Boyd because of the injury concern. But the floor is so much higher with Boyd. Boyd is everything that the Jets need. Reliable, consistent, really good hands, solid route runner, durable. Sign me up. That is, if they don't get Mike Williams, I want Tyler Boyd.
All right, let me present a situation. What if Joe Douglas came out and said, to stay as financially flexible as possible, we had to let Bryce Huff go, and then the money went to Mike Williams? Because or it went to a Tyron Smith.
I mean, my argument back to that would be you could have just restructured two contracts and still re-signed Bryce Huff and did both. That would be my argument. Like, I don't think it has to be one or the other. I like, the cap is real, yes, but there are many ways currently that the Jets can manipulate the cap to create a lot of cap space. And they're not doing it, and that's fine. Honestly, shout out Joe Douglas, because if he's not here next year, he's really doing a good job for the next GM. He's going to have less of a mess to clean up if they don't restructure more contracts. But they can do both. Like, that would be my argument back to that. It doesn't have to be one or the other.
So I personally, if you like, what I think's going to happen at the end of the day is it's pretty much 4 o'clock now. We want to wrap up the show. I think by the end of the free agency frenzy, I think the Jets are going to have an average safety, because I don't think they're going to pay crazy money for a safety to replace.
You know, like a starting caliber safety, or
like an average starting safety, but they're not like maybe what Geno Stone got from the Bengals, like that sort of money.
I don't think so. I think Clark and Adams are your starters. And then maybe they bring back Ashton Davis, or maybe they bring back someone else.
Well, I don't think Adams will start. I think that's the one who gets bumped.
I'd be surprised, but I wouldn't be opposed.
I was in the preseason. Tony Adams. Look what happened to Tony Adams.
I was a Tony Adams doubter for a lot of the season. I do think he got better. Also, it's officially 4 o'clock. So you're here. You're seeing all the Happy New Year tweets. Happy New Year, folks. Happy New League Year. We'll say it in person instead of
Happy New Year. Sorry. I think we're going to end up with David Bakhtiari.
Yep.
If he's the starter or not, but he's going to come. And I think there's going to be a veteran receiver on like a, let's say maybe 3 years, $30 million deal. Like sure. What Lazard got, because Lazard, the cap exploded. So you can now pay. God, imagine if Lazard came out this year and they paid him like $15 million or something like that. That would have been
paid him $11 million. Like, oh.
Yeah, but I feel like now $11 million is a little bit more reasonable. I think maybe they get a Curtis Samuel, a Tyler Boyd for that sort of money. That's what I think is going to happen.
Okay. You know what I think is going to happen? I'll make my prediction. Four players the Jets are going to sign. Ready? David Bakhtiari.
That's a lock. He's going to be the secretary of defense after Rodgers is the VP. So.
Marquez Valdes-Scantling. Odell Beckham. Mercedes Lewis. Call it a day.
Is Mercedes Lewis even still active?
Yes. No, I didn't get to talk about Mercedes Lewis in this. I actually want Mercedes Lewis.
He's 40.
Mercedes Lewis, I believe if he plays next season, will be the oldest tight end in NFL history. I tried to do research on that. There's a couple of guys who like were a long snapper and kind of played tight end. He'd be the oldest true tight end in NFL history. Also, he's actually still good. He was a very good run blocker last year, and he played 29% of snaps for the Bears. Give me Mercedes Lewis as tight end three. I'm cool with that. I will be happy.
He needs to go and get his AARP card. That's what he needs. He didn't need more football. He didn't need more brain damage. He'll be a family man.
Those are my predictions. Maybe they – I don't know. I'll throw out other names. I hope you see a trend here. They're also going to sign A.J. Dillon. They're going to sign Yosh Nyman. Hell, Robert Saleh is going to sign Eric Armstead. They're just going to sign everybody and Kevin Zeitler. Complete the trifecta.
There's not enough Titans there. There's not enough Tennessee Titans on the offense.
Tierre Tart, is he a free agent? I think he's a former Titan.
He is, yes.
He got there and he got their nose tackle, though. Damn. I don't know.
That won't stop Saleh, Mr. Defensive Line. They already drafted McDonald.
Trade for Chigakonko. I don't know what they're going
to
do, man.
that wouldn't be that bad, actually.
We'll bring Ryan Tannehill in as QB3.
So thank you guys for tuning in. We got a lot of guys watching in. Thank you so much for that. Free agency is not going away, even if some of the big names are off the board. We'll probably have some takes on that, and maybe if our quarterback ends up doing a foray into politics, which I don't think will happen, but hey, man, I think he tears Achilles, so who knows?
That email I got might beg to differ.
Yeah, or they're trying to set you up as a sucker to get more attention on their flailing campaign. That's the other thing.
It might have worked. It might have worked because I might tweet it out too.
And it might say, "Oh, if we get what's going to get more headlines, Aaron Rodgers or like a former senator from New Mexico who hasn't been elected in 8 years."
Well, that's why they were like Jesse Ventura, former governor and pro wrestler, or Aaron Rodgers. Which one?
I guess, at least Jesse Ventura has been elected to something, oddly enough, because of these weird times we live in. So you didn't come here for politics. You came here for free agent talk, and we're going to do more free agent talk probably next week when we do our show. I'm sure the Jets will make some stupid move that we can all complain about since then. But in the meantime, you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, wherever you get your podcasts, and YouTube at the Jet Press. Justin, any final thoughts after – kind of a busy start to free agency.
Yeah, I think this is our longest stream ever. And we started early, so that makes sense. And despite that, the only move I think that the Jets made during this time was re-signing Thomas Morstead. So that's cool. That's awesome. They didn't do a wide receiver move, although knowing us, it's probably going to happen like right after we go, right after we end the show. They'll probably sign Marquez Valdes-Scantling or something like that, and I'll be very sad. But yeah, man, it's been a wild few days. Shout out Jets fans for sticking through it with this team because – dude, it's a mess sometimes covering this team. It really is. Everything with the Aaron Rodgers thing to the first few days of free agency, people were losing their minds. Shout out to everyone who is sticking by this team and also watching with us and hanging out with us because we always love interacting with Jets fans. It's awesome. We're Jets fans, obviously, as well. So it's fun to talk about this team and kind of vent and rants. But anyway, I'm going on now. I'm rambling. So Until next week, where we're recapping everything else that happens with Jets free agency. Thank you all for joining us on the show today. You can follow Mike on Twitter at @ByMikeLuciano. Follow me on Twitter at @JustinCFreed. Follow Jet Press at the Jet Press. Download the Jet Press podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Check us out on YouTube and TikTok for now, I guess. Subscribe, like, hit that notification bell. You guys know what to do. We stream live every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern time. Thank you all for listening to Jet Press podcast. I've been Justin Freed. That has been Mike Luciano. Happy free agency. Happy new league year. We'll see you guys next week.
We'll see you folks next week. Hopefully we get more signings to talk about.
If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it, Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.